Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning, wherever and whenever you are here in the great wide world, connected by the great world wide web. It is the last three guys to do a podcast. However, we're only 66% of them. I'm John Morgan alongside Leon Brown. Daniel Bolton is running a little late. We expect him momentarily, but we have to get with our special guest today. We're being joined by Matt Stewart, who does a little bit of everything in the sportscasting world. Right now, he's an ESPN3 voice, does college basketball, SEC, pretty much SEC, right, Matt? Sun Belt, right. Yeah, all right, Matt. You were with, I believe, your last game that I noticed you did, the Georgia-Arkansas women's game, I think is what you, your last game. Am I right? And that was that's very interesting story in that one. I don't know if you can tell us about it. Joni Taylor, the University of Georgia women's basketball coach, coached in that game just 48 hours after giving birth. That is an incredible story, Matt.
And the plan was she was not going to be at the game on Thursday night when Georgia hosted Arkansas. They've had a plan in place. Obviously, she's been pregnant now for, 9 months. So they knew this was coming. And assistant coach Karen Lang was going to be the acting coach. This is what they did the last time when she gave birth to her first daughter, JC, back in 2016. And, so Karen actually coached the team. But, I mean, to say that Joni did not coach the team would be a little bit of a misnomer, too, because she was on the bench. She just wasn't the acting coach. She really kind of took on the role of like an assistant coach while Karen was actually doing the head coaching. And when they would come to a huddle and stuff like that, she would talk to individual players. But it was very interesting. She was there. She was there for the game about 48 hours after she had given birth to her second child. And, of course, she got a big standing ovation when she came in, and she showed up right as the game was starting, and she left right when the horn sounded. And she was not with the team. The team playing Sunday night against Alabama. Right. She didn't make the road trip, and she probably won't make the next road trip either. The next game she'll probably get back to full-time duties will be their regular season finale, which is next Sunday against Kentucky.
Yeah, a week from today, because women's basketball kind of winding down, men's basketball kind of winding down too.
Yeah.
You've been doing a lot of SEC games this season, Matt. What is the one team that's kind of stuck out to you and doing a good thing?
Yeah, you mean on the men's side?
On the men's side.
Yeah, LSU. I mean, to me, LSU is the huge story. Well, Tennessee, too. But Tennessee made that jump, started to make the jump that they've made last year to number one. But I think really kind of overarching, if you were going to say the last couple of years, this year definitely LSU would be top of the list, 1A, and Tennessee's my 1B. But together, those two, what Will Wade's been able to do at LSU, what Rick Barnes has been able to do at Tennessee to resurrect those two storied programs, both of them have a great past of college basketball. Both have had tremendous success. Of course, LSU's been to the Final Four, Dell Brown. Tennessee's had great success, many star players in their career. But what those two coaches have done to resurrect those two programs and bring them up the dregs, I mean, it was just a couple of years ago, these two programs were bottom four in the SEC, and these coaches have done a tremendous job, and they've turned the conference into, a conference that's not Kentucky only. That's not the only storyline. It wasn't too long ago that, the conference had gotten to a point where it was just Kentucky. That was the only team worth talking about. And now you've got LSU and Tennessee in the mix and some other teams too. But I mean, those three teams are tied for first place here with, a couple of weeks left in the regular season.
Yeah, it's amazing. And of course, Tennessee, you've got to talk about Grant Williams, what he has been able to do for the Vols this season. Well, first of all, Matt, how do you evaluate Grant's game?
The job that guys like Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield have done to make themselves great basketball players. I think Grant Williams had an offer from Richmond and another mid-major offer in addition to Tennessee when he signed with the Volunteers. This was a kid who was not high, he's not one of those one and dones by any means, and he's not wasn't one of these highly recruited guys who came in with NBA aspirations. He was just looking to play college basketball, and he under Rick Barnes has developed into a tremendous basketball player, the SEC Player of the Year. He had a great shot. I don't know if you saw the game against LSU in overtime. They threw a baseball pass to him there in overtime. He had a great look to maybe tie the game and send it to a second overtime, and it just didn't go down for him. But he's kind of emblematic of what the Tennessee program is. I mean, he's made himself into a great basketball player, and Tennessee has made themselves into a great basketball program without, you know, the high-profile recruits like Kentucky and Duke and some of the other programs get.
Well, I got to ask you this, though, Matt. Tom Crean, how do you evaluate his job in year one at Georgia? I mean, the Bulldogs are not where they where their fans want them to be, but do you see signs that that program is turning around?
Anthony Edwards. I mean, that's the key. I mean, right there. I mean, he just, you know, this season's going to be, it's a terrible season. They're 1-13. They've lost back-to-back 1-point games to Mississippi State and Ole Miss. I mean, they're right. I mean, they've been, by and large, they've been competitive. They've been there. They just haven't won these games. And, you know, they don't have a whole lot of talent. Let's face it. Nicholas Claxton, Rashawn Hammonds, those guys are really, you know, the cream of the crop as far as the roster right now. But you're bringing in a guy that may or may not be the number one recruit in the country. He certainly is one of them. Certainly top five. Certainly a guy that if the NBA allowed kids to go directly from school to the NBA, he'd be doing that. So he's a one and done. I think the key with him will be, does Georgia take advantage of the 1 year that he, and I'm assuming he's only going to be there for 1 year. Does Georgia take advantage of the 1 year that he's on campus and use that not only to springboard to a great season next year, but also to use him as momentum in recruiting to be able to get other high profile guys, you know, perhaps even for next year's team? Because he's only going to be there for 1 year. But, I mean, is he the guy that opens the door for Crean to be able to, you know, hang his hat on and say, look, he came here, you can come here too. So very rare. I mean, if you look back during the Mark Fox era outside of Kentavious Caldwell Pope, not only did Georgia not get the number one player in the nation, they rarely got the number one player in the state. KCP was the last one, and they rarely got top 10 guys. You go back and look at, if you kind of did a composite of their recruiting rankings, going back to KCP, going back to the Mark Fox era, the typical ranking was about 9 or 10, the best that Georgia got in the state, maybe the 9th or 10th best guy in the state. So programs all over the country were coming in here and raiding Georgia, getting the best players out. And, Tom Crean's hope is that he's going to be able to change that, and getting Edwards is a first step in that direction.
Speaking with Matt Stewart, play-by-play voice for ESPN3, Georgia Public Broadcasting, and also does some stuff with Georgia State as well, talking SEC basketball. And I think Leon's got a question for you.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. I was thinking to myself, you know, like, and you kind of took the words in my mouth when speaking about SEC basketball. I was like, man, outside of Kentucky, I'm talking about as far as traditional powerhouses, this is an opportunity for a team such as Tennessee and LSU to go off and put themselves in a position to go off and at least step into that tradition. Because, you know, we look at Kentucky, I mean, they've got so many players over the years, it's mm-hmm. crazy. It's like, as far as like, they're like, it's kind of like they're like, they kind of represent like a vacuum, just sucking up all the talent. So I look at, like, when I look at Tennessee and then you speaking on Georgia and all that, but like Tennessee and LSU, this is a good opportunity. I think this is like the last, as far as in my opinion, and I could be wrong, but the last major recruit that I could think of that came out of LSU, we had the Ben Simmons, but the largest was maybe like Shaq.
Yeah, Ben Simmons, who was basic. Didn't he get hurt like halfway through the year? and then just kind of, it's kind of like what Vanderbilt. And Matt, I do want to ask you. I went to Vanderbilt, so
right.
So I want to ask you about the lost season of the Commodores that they're having with ever since Darius Garland went down.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't seem to get anything together.
Yeah,
they're winless in the conference. Going back to the LSU thing real quick. Yeah, right. Ben Simmons obviously was the number one pick in the draft. I mean, and Shaq, and they had Chris Jackson, who became Mahmoud Raouf, Abdullah Raouf. In the NBA, but Chris Jackson was one of the most dynamic players I ever saw play in college basketball, and he was on that team with Shaq. In fact, he was the better basketball player. Shaq was just dominant with his massive size, not to take anything away. Shaq was obviously a great player, but Chris Jackson, Pete Maravich, who, I mean, to me was one of the most innovative basketball players in the history of the game, so far ahead of his time in the way he played the game, Bob Pettit. I mean, they've had tremendous history of incredible basketball players who went on to have careers in the NBA, and but ever since Dale Brown, it's been, you know, and John Brady got him to a Final Four, when was that? He lose track of time, a decade ago. John Brady got him to a Final Four. So yeah, they've had a history. It's been down, and that's what I was talking about when I said earlier, it's great to see programs, storied basketball programs, who's had a history in this. And you're right, Kentucky's dominated. I mean, there's no other way to put it. But LSU's had their time, and they've had some time, and Tennessee's had some time, and it looks like they're back to a place where, you know, at least this year. And I have to think, as long as Barnes and Wade are there, they're going to be competing, because to me those are the guys that have made the difference. Now, as far as Vanderbilt, yeah, you're right. I mean, golly. What an unfortunate season with the injuries, and they had such high expectations with the recruiting class that he's been able to bring in there, and then just to have it kind of go down in flames, it's been really, really disappointing. But I believe in Bryce Drew. I think he's a great coach. I think he'll get them there. I don't think they're, you know, I think he's gonna have them there, and you know, and it probably would have been closer to that this year had they not had the injuries, but I think he'll do fine.
All right, Matt, I know we have to let you go, but I want one quick question with you. You mentioned when you're talking about Georgia how every program was kind of coming in raiding the state, but look at the job that Ron Hunter has done. He's got Devin Mitchell, you know, DeMarcus Simons, Nelson Phillips. He's getting those players to come in and stay here, although in Devin's case, he went to Alabama and then came back. How important is it for Georgia as a state to at least have one program that's able to keep these players here?
Well, I mean, it'd be great if all of them could. I'd love to see the day when, you know, everybody was competitive, but there's no doubt. I mean, this year, Georgia State is the best team in the state. And there's, I mean, it's that's not even, you know, that's not even a question. Georgia and Georgia Tech are never going to, you know, allow Georgia State to be on their schedule every year. It's just not going to happen. They, you know, they have nothing to gain and everything to lose by that. So Georgia State's always going to be in that position where, you know, they're trying to chip away at that part of it. But there's no question. I mean, they're not chipping away at anything right now. They are the best team in the state. They've just got to be able to win their conference. And right now I think they're number two in the Sun Belt behind Texas State. And if you want to win that, you know, they've gone back to the old format, the previous format in that Sun Belt tournament, which I'll be calling next month.
Oh, cool.
And so your chances of winning that tournament really rely on being a top one or two seed. I don't think they've had a year where they've been in this format where the top two seeds get the bye all the way to the semifinals. I don't think we've had a year where a team outside of the one and two have won the championship under this format. So I think it pretty much speaks for itself. If you want to win the tournament in this format, you got to be the one or the two. And right now, I think Georgia State is the two. They're currently tied in the standings with Georgia Southern, with which they have the tiebreaker, but they got to play the Eagles in the regular season finale down there. So that's going to be a highly contested, you know, not to mention the rivalry aspect of it. But as far as what's riding on that game, it's going to be huge for both of those programs.
Oh, yes. Yeah, a lot
both of those programs. Because, like I said, the one and the two is the ticket in the Sun Belt Conference. And right now, Texas State has the one spot and Georgia State has the two spot. If the Panthers want to get to the NCAA tournament, I would say their hopes of doing that rely heavily on them being able to stay in either the one or the two spot.
Right. Well, I'll definitely be seeing you in New Orleans in a couple of weeks because, you know, I'll be doing the Georgia State women's team. You actually did one game for Georgia State women's. I noticed that.
Well, I did.
There are the 4 seed right now kind of hanging on. What's your impression on them?
Coach has done a tremendous job, man. To turn around. I did a Georgia State women's game last year as well. Just to turn around the program, the players that he's been able to bring in, and the players that he has revitalized, and some that were in starring roles are now in more reserve roles.
Yes.
He's just done a really good job of invigorating the program. My impression, when I saw them last year, there just wasn't a whole lot of optimism around the program, wasn't a whole lot of energy around the program. And it was kind of, and Coach Baldwin eventually did get let go at the end of the year. And when I saw them in January, that seemed like there was kind of this, it was, for lack of better words, kind of a death march to the end of the season.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because it seemed like the inevitable was out there. And I just think that the program is a tremendous turnaround, and I see bright things for the program.
Well, he's got my vote for Sun Belt Coach of the Year, and we'll see how that factors in. Well, Matt, we've got to let you go. I thank you so much for spending part of your talking with us here on the last three guys, now the last two guys to do a podcast.
Good.
Hope we'll be able to talk to you more when we get closer to football, talking about your Georgia high school duties and whatever Georgia State football games you get to do.
That's great. I look forward to it.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. Yeah, have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, that was Matt Stewart, play-by-play voice of ESPN+, and he also helps out on Georgia State, and he's also the GPB High School play-by-play announcer. Leon talking to us about college basketball. Apologize, didn't get much time with him. I'm really sorry about that, but you know, we had a very tight time limit with him, so it's just a matter of, you know, we got to get in, do what we needed to do, and get out. So, again, Daniel Bolton should be here in a matter of moments, and we'll talk more about basketball and football and everything. But, you know, Matt's talking about, again, we were talking about the SEC basketball, and Daniel, I'm sorry, Leon, it's just, you said it yourself, it's no longer Kentucky, and it's made it more exciting than it normally would be.
Yeah, it's like, when you think of SEC, like, for example, we were speaking about Georgia. They've landed their first 5-star recruit in history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 2019.
Right. Hard to believe Dominique wasn't a 5-star recruit.
That's crazy. But, you know, at the same time, though, you know, we're talking just like the 80s.
Right, right.
You know, there are a lot, you know, there's sometimes a lot of players that went overlooked. Okay. But the fact is that how a lot of these teams are coming to the state and poaching the state for all the talent. It's surprised that Lou Williams, who is a Snellville native, I believe.
Yes, he is.
He didn't go to a Georgia school.
No, he didn't. No, like I said, this is very complex, especially for the women's game, and we'll get into that in a moment. Yes, women's basketball in Georgia, a lot of the top players have left the state. I'm thinking of Asia Durr, who's now playing over at Louisville. Diamond DeShields eventually went to Tennessee, among others. And as I travel around this, the Southeast and this area with my duty for Georgia State women's, one player from all of these squads hails somewhere from Georgia. The amount of talent in this state is absolutely amazing, and it's just interesting to see that Ron Hunter is probably the only person who's been able to consistently land top recruits to Georgia to stay in state on a regular basis. And now Daniel Bolton has joined us. He is back. He is here. Daniel, good to see you. It's interesting that, again, you were not with us last week, and again, apologize that you missed the Matt Stewart conversation, but again, he was on a very tight time frame, but he did agree to join us as we got closer to football season.
Good.
Because again, he is the voice of Georgia State football and the Friday night high school game of the week for Georgia Public Broadcasting. So we were talking, Matt, Daniel, about the exodus of high school talent. It seems like we talk about this every year, that these programs are coming in and poaching the talent. But is it a matter of isn't it more along the lines of a chicken and egg argument? You know, what comes first? Does like a Georgia have to be good and then get the talent? or do they get the talent and then be good?
That's a good question. That's a tremendously good question. It's always been, well, especially in college basketball, it's really been about the colleges and how good they are as far as the recruiting talent goes, right?
Right.
So you would guess that in high school play, it probably would be the same thing. I mean, you look at schools like Morgan County, for example, who I have the pleasure of calling basketball games for, and I'm actually calling their playoff game on Tuesday night. You look at them, they've been state champions before. Their last state championship was 2016, and they look like they're on their way to another state championship. We're talking about the boys' team, right?
Right.
But that's what it seems as if it is to me. And if we're talking about as far as high school translating into college and maintaining in college basketball, I mean, the state of Georgia is up there.
Right.
But it's not like it is in football.
No, of course not.
Football, we're probably in the top three as far as producing great talent.
Florida, Texas, California.
Yeah, Florida, Texas, California, and us. Those are the four, and then everybody else falls up underneath us, right? In basketball, it's kind of different. You know, I'm not really sure. I don't know, John. You tell me, who do you think would actually run, what state actually runs basketball?
I think I'm probably thinking California.
Yeah, I'm thinking
Cali.
Probably would be California.
Yeah. California.
At least, but in this area, it's kind of interesting because the talent comes from all over the place. I think Texas is a good, and maybe Texas, Florida.
Texas will have three or four guys.
Right. Basketball is more so like a city sport.
Yeah,
yes.
If you think about it, it's a real urban concrete sport.
You're right.
So, you know, very rarely do we hear of, you know, great basketball players coming from, you know, like small market cities, you know, you're more country cities. But when you look at something like football, look, that's when you think of Georgia, fields and
right.
country and
yeah.
You know, hard living.
South Georgia.
Right.
Basically. Because that's where they
carrying bales of hay.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, producing linebacker. Yeah, linebacker, you know, yeah. Linebacker country, you know, so, you know, because we think of something like Russell Westbrook, yeah, that guy's from the city.
Yeah.
You know, so, or, you know, even, but, you know, you think of LeBron, well, LeBron James was from Akron.
Akron, Ohio.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Jordan grew up in New York.
New York.
When you think of Dr. Dre, you think of, I mean, not Dr. J.
Well, Jordan was from Wilmington, wasn't he?
He's actually from North Carolina.
Right, Wilmington.
Right, but he grew up.
In New York.
In New York.
But he didn't go to high school in New York, though. He went to high school in North Carolina.
Interesting. He went to college in North Carolina, I believe.
I think he went to high school in Wilmington. Because the gym and the arena for UNC Wilmington is just festooned with Jordan plaques.
Gotcha.
Mm.
Okay. I mean, they are just all over the place. So I think that's where he went to high school.
Okay.
Okay. Well, if you think of, you know, like I said, for the most part, you know, I think Will Chamberlain was actually from Kansas. He's from Kansas.
Yes.
So, you know, but I guess all by and large, you know, for the most part, you know, we look at basketball, that's like more like an urban sport, and football is mainly so a less than urban sport.
True.
So
yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence from Cartersville, even though Cartersville is trying to claim themselves as a suburb from Atlanta. And no.
So now we'll wait.
No, you're more a suburb of Rome than you're a suburb of Atlanta. No, you're not.
You're an hour, maybe an hour and a half away from Atlanta. So how is that possible? Boom. Shout out to my Cartersville fans.
Exactly. Boom. Daniel, I want to ask you this. With the Morgan County squad, let's use Morgan County as an example.
Okay.
Do they have any seniors? And second of all, who's recruiting them, if anybody?
Yes, they do have seniors, and they have some guys who have already been committed. One guy that jumps out is Alec Woodard. He's a senior. He's committed to Austin Peay, so he'll be playing at Austin Peay next year.
In Clarksville.
Clarksville. What is that, Kentucky?
They're
in the Ohio Valley.
They're in the Ohio Valley, but they're in Tennessee.
They're in Tennessee. There you go. Clarksville, Tennessee.
Clarksville, Tennessee.
Right. So, and the funny part about it is Morgan County ranked number one, but a lot of those guys on that team, that's really the only guy who's committed
okay.
to a school. But technically he's really not the best player on the team. Like, the best player is Tyron Lawrence. And he's been just simply amazing every game. The thing about Morgan County is that when I watch them play, is Tyron Lawrence is going to always be in the midst of things. But then you've got guys like Stevin Green and Alec Woodard. And you got those guys. One day Stevin Green will have 34 points. He had 5 points in the win this week against number 2 GAC, Greater Atlanta Christian. This was a number 1 versus number 2 matchup in the second round of the tournament. The reason why is because Greater Atlanta Christian didn't take care of business. They lost in their regional final.
Lost in their regional final.
So they became the number 2 seed. Morgan County went unbeaten the entire, ran shot through the entire region. 2 losses. One of their losses was to Langston U. That was it.
Okay.
So, but those guys, they have, they have at least 5 guys that are D1 ready to play basketball.
Do you think those other seniors, are they waiting for like a D2 or a D3? Or?
I'm not sure what they could be waiting on, John. Uh-huh. I know Tyron has had, he's got offers from, I believe, 5 schools.
Okay. So he hasn't made a decision yet.
He hasn't made a decision yet. Okay. I think a lot of those guys are indecisive.
Okay, well, so that's all right. That's probably a better issue, right?
Will the talent stay home?
That's the question.
That's the question. Yeah. And I think if I'm looking at Morgan County's talent, the answer could be yes, because I don't think they've been sought out by a lot of the major D1 schools, like some of your power conferences, you know, like the SEC, the ACC, the Big 10, the Big 12, you know, those conferences. Right. Now, mid-majors, maybe. You know, but they haven't been really sought out by them. And I'm really not understanding why. I've seen this team at least 6 times this year, and I've seen how good they can be. And they could, and about 5 of those guys, like I said, could go to Duke or North Carolina. Now, maybe they might not have the grades for Duke, because Duke is a tough place to get in.
And they offer what's their scholarship offering looking like?
That's a good question, too.
And another
thing, you got to have the grades too to get.
Yeah,
it.
I don't
to
think.
Duke, yeah, have the grades.
SAT scores plays a huge factor in it.
But here's another thing: won't they be waiting for the Final 4 weekend in Macon for all the scouts and coaches to come looking?
So. Yeah, because that's a hotbed for that. Yeah, the Final 4, well, the championship
rounds,
even the Final 4s though,
right?
In the different locations, they'll be in Armstrong Atlantic. The 3A.
Okay, yeah, down in Savannah.
It would be down in Savannah. Yeah.
Right.
So they'll be well, it's not Armstrong Atlantic anymore. I think it's,
Didn't
it's Georgia
get,
Southern.
It got
Savannah campus.
Right. Yeah. It got folded in.
In
that wave of mergers that Georgia State and Georgia Perimeter were a part of.
Exactly.
Macon State, Middle Georgia, and all that.
So I would think that maybe around this week, because it is quarterfinals week, but semifinals and finals, like John mentioned, I think that you'll see a lot of scouts and a lot of recruits out there recruiting these guys.
Okay.
You know what's interesting to me is that eventually Georgia Tech and the UGA are going to come off their high horse to see Georgia State.
As Matt said, there's nothing in it for them.
Well,
they play them, they win. You're supposed to win. They play them, they lose. Then there goes your recruiting advantage. But again, Ron Hunter, like he did this year, he's going to have to do an end run around that. Find out when and where Georgia Tech going to be in one of those 18 tournaments and kind of get his way in there. Mm-hmm. That's the only way he's going to be able to play Georgia and Georgia Tech. They don't want any part of them. And actually, we're going to get to the point where no one in the SEC and nobody in the ACC is going to want any part of him. He's having a very difficult time scheduling teams.
He is. And that's the thing that I don't think the NCAA understands neither. Listen, we can sit here and we can say, look, this is a, when we talk about getting into the tournament, what's the one thing that we have a problem with? The strength of schedules.
Right.
But that's going to go against Ron.
Every time.
Every single time, because he can't find nobody to schedule. He can't find nobody to. He wants to play formidable opponents. It's not like he's trying to run away from them.
No, he wants them. They don't want any part of
them. They don't want any part of them. So what's that going to do? If they end up being, let's say next year, because this year they're kind of underachieving a little bit this year. Let's say next year they go 23-4. or I'm sorry, 30-4, yeah, right? And they don't win their conference tournament, and somebody else in the Sun Belt League gets the automatic bid.
They could be left out.
We've seen St. Louis get left out on many occasions, and they've been a 5-loss team.
Yeah.
And St. Mary's has been left out. Why? Because nobody wants to schedule. so they get punished for that. That's why I think I have such a big problem with teams who don't make the tournament with such a great record.
Right.
Listen, if St. Mary's, if Kentucky doesn't want to play St. Mary's, Kentucky doesn't want to play St. Mary's because it feels like it's going to hurt their schedule. If we beat them by 40 points, the committee's going to look at it and they're not a formidable win.
Yeah.
It's St. Mary's. You know? So it's like a double-edged sword. I've been
trying to get Coach Hunter on the podcast for pretty much the whole season. I'm still trying. Hopefully we'll get him on before the tournament, even though we are indeed running out of time. Hopefully I'll be able to touch base with his office sometime this week, and we'll try again for next week. Again, I've been calling pretty much trying to get him every week. We've got an agreement in principle. We just can't seem to quite nail down the right week. And now that we are getting close to the conference tournament, it'd probably be a good idea to bring back Coach Gene Hill and see what Georgia State women's is looking at as they get to the conference tournament down at the Lakefront Coliseum in New Orleans. Last year, we're going to be in the Lakefront Coliseum, by the way.
Wow.
Next season, we're moving across town to the Smoothie King Center.
Oh, wow.
For New Orleans. Home of the Pelicans. Yes.
We're going to go into the Smoothie King
Center. Exactly. Oh, right downtown, right across the street from the Superdome.
Yeah.
But yeah, whenever you hear Coach Hunter, whenever he goes out in public as part of the Panthers caravan tour of spring coaches tour, they always ask him, you know, what's up with the schedule? And he's like, look, I'm trying. I'm calling people. I say, hey, come play. But A, they don't want to play him. I mean, they don't want to come to Atlanta. It's always kind of like a one deal. They, you know, you go there, but, you know. So it's kind of like, you know, whoever he can kind of put together.
But he doesn't care, though, does he? No,
well, he doesn't
care to travel.
No, he doesn't care. And right. Look at this season. They were down by how much? 25 in Alabama and won?
And won the game.
Yes.
Right.
So, you know, so kudos to Coach Hunter. Kudos to Georgia State. And as Matt Stewart said, Georgia State is without a doubt the best team in Georgia right now. There's no question. No question about that. And he said Georgia State also has to get in those 1 and 2 seeds in the conference tournament. So that I think they're tied for second right now with Georgia Southern after their loss on the beach at Coastal Carolina last night. And, you know, we'll just monitor how. The problem with Georgia State is they only have 3 more games left. A lot of teams have 4 left.
Yep.
So that's going to really hurt. But the one team that they are in competition with, Georgia Southern, they only have 3. So that game 2 weeks from yesterday down at Hanner Fieldhouse, that's going to be a huge game. And, boy, are they going to go into a lion's den on that one.
Yeah, they are.
But, you know, I think we got to talk about the elephant in the room this week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the, you know, we think of the story for the NBA, it's like, eh.
Yeah.
Mr. Tim. It's unfortunately, you know, as the world has heard about Mr. Tim Donaghy conspiring to allegedly Pete Rose to enter for the NBA.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, allegedly fixing games to suit his own financial benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Are we surprised?
I don't think so. I think we knew he was capable of it. I think we knew he had the right mentality to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And from what we've been hearing about him, you know, that's something that, yeah, that doesn't faze me at all. What fazes me is that it took us so long to find out about it.
Yeah. They say he only did 15 months in prison for that. You know, come out and they're saying that he was a lone wolf.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that he is not the face of a franchise.
Oh, well, that's true.
Right.
So, you know, hopefully that sounds great. I heard, you know, and when I heard about the story, you know, I like to look at comments, and a lot of the world were talking about 2002 NBA Finals Lakers and Kings. Hey, we had Shaq and Kobe. They didn't. We won. It is what it is.
Was the referee in that game 6?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. Yeah, look at him. Was he?
Well, I'll have to do some research on that to find out.
Was it 6 or 7? Because they were down 3-1 in that series, correct?
Yeah, we were, yeah.
I think they were down 3-1 in that series.
Yeah, we came back to handle business. Shaq hit them free throws and everything like that. You know, but at the same time, though, let's hope that Mr. Daneke is not the head of some type of franchise out there, because when I seen David Stern's reaction to it, mm-hmm. and that smile that weird smile he has on it, that look he has on his face, yeah. I mean it a picture is worth 1,000 words in the back of his mind. It's just are we going to see a trend of this? Well, do you believe stuff like this will continue to come out, or they're going to a lid we put on this, or
things are going to come out every day about sports, you know? Just like in baseball a few years back when the Mitchell Report came out.
Oh, yes.
You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
That big document, you know what I'm saying? And even going back to baseball, back into the 80s, when they had a big cocaine problem, that was coming out. And then you had the Pete Rose situation that came out, but you know he went on 2020 and admitted that he gambled in baseball. There's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to come out.
Yeah,
you know, look at the NFL right now. Look at the NFL.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like the cocaine problem, you know. I believe in say no to drugs and everything like that.
Sure,
but you know, that's to me. That's like okay. That's like, oh my, it's jaw-dropping, but it's like, it doesn't question the integrity of the sport.
Sure.
You know, when we think of Tim Donaghy, that's the integrity of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, the backbone of the sport is gambling. Let's keep it, let's be honest with you. And that's the whole point of paying these NBA players.
In games.
Right.
Yeah.
And the reason why these players are offered these supermaxes is so therefore the gamblers don't pay them. So we got to look at how are they paying the referees enough money? You know, how much are they paying these referees? I mean, are they just giving should these referees be offered 7-figure contracts to avoid this from happening? They got to pay these guys.
That's true.
And if you're paying, if we really kind of I believe referees are they just doing 5 figures?
I think 5 figures. Yeah, I'm not sure what their paycheck is a game, but I think they only do 5 figures. They don't get paid 6. And I don't know. I don't even know if they get to stay in the luxurious hotels.
Oh man, pay these guys, man!
Yeah.
It's just like it's just pay them. And if I believe if they start paying these referees at least $200K a year, and then give them even stronger raises during the playoffs, it would end all this. That's something that's a critical state needs to get into. You know. As far as how much these NFL refs are being paid, how much these umpires are being paid, how much these NBA referees are being paid, and we need to go up. That right there will solve the problem overnight.
Well, here's the thing about the referees being paid, especially in the NFL. They don't – the NFL referees, they really – this year they did a crappy job.
Yeah.
Okay, they did not officiate well. So that should be based upon of their performance. Now there's the problem, because NFL referees are going to look at it and say, well, we have a harder job than NBA refs. And now you're going to open up a big can of worms about who's supposed to get paid more. Like, do these Major League Baseball umpires, are they supposed to get paid more than NBA refs?
NHL refs,
are they supposed to get paid more? You know, now you're about to open up a can of worms with that.
NFL referees earn an average of $173,000 a year in 2013 and average of $205,000 by this year.
Okay.
Yeah, well, they're making good money.
They're being cashed out.
They're good money for them.
Decent money, yeah.
Absolutely.
6 figures?
Absolutely.
16,
so.
8, or 22 weeks a year? Yeah.
Right.
22 Sundays a year, maybe more than that?
Maybe more than that.
26?
That paycheck is good.
Last year, the Super Bowl referees took home $112,000 apiece.
Dang, man. I got to become an NFL ref.
I might need to go to training.
Yeah.
Real talk. So you know, I believe they are being. They're being cashed out. So.
But what you get out of that though is the scrutiny and the backlash.
Right.
You make one false call. Look at the referee in the Saints. Rams game. You make one false call, and that's it.
Yeah.
Now, do you just go home? Are you going to be strong enough to go home and say, I screwed up. 5, 10, 15, up 20. You know.
The average salary of an NBA referee, $150K to $550K a year.
Okay, then.
Yeah, depending on if you're Scott Foster, yeah, you're one of the guys that's going to get paid close to $500,000.
Right.
Because he's like one of the senior officials in the NBA, right?
It's a slang scale based on seniority.
Seniority, yeah. Yeah, if you're one of the rookies in the league, then you're going to get close to, which is not bad.
You're going to be stuck doing Suns games all season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So
then, now they don't do 82 games a year, I'm pretty sure. They may. They might do 82 games a year, but it depends on how many teams of officials there are in the league.
And right. Do they work together the whole season?
The whole season.
Do they split up? I mean, what happens when you have a night where there's 12 games and then a night where there's only 3?
Exactly.
All right. So do we think that this way, you know, because the NFL has done pretty good about keeping a lid on corruption and everything like that. We have, I mean, I think the most corruptive thing we heard about the NFL is maybe the, you know, I think the NFL runs a pretty tight ship on paper.
On paper, but yeah, things kind of seep out.
You know, the Ray Rice situation. I think
Deflate Gate. What happened last week?
Yeah.
You know, Bounty Gate.
Yeah.
And all the other gates.
But that does. But you know, the Spy Gate.
Right.
Nasty Gate.
But we haven't heard anything about, you know, there hasn't been a Tim Donaghy of the NFL.
There's never been any accusation that anyone has thrown games.
Right.
That's absolutely right.
And that's just what we're looking for right there. I mean, I could live with, you know, I could live with Bounty Gate.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, especially if it's my team that's doing it. I'm going to be honest with you. you know, Spygate. You know, to a certain degree. I mean, if you look at that, haven't really damaged Bill Belichick's legacy like that. You know, he's still regarded as being one of the greatest coaches.
The NFL, it's more of a personal thing that a lot of people are having problems with. You know, of course, Aaron Hernandez, rest mm-hmm. his soul, had personal issues. Ray Rice had his personal issues.
Yeah, we got Dante Stallworth killed somebody behind the wheel.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, you know, you got Ray Lewis shut down Buckhead.
Exactly.
You know,
Robert Kraft does.
Oh, man.
Young, right?
Yeah, he still likes some young.
Gate. That's what you call
the Nasty Gate. Man. So, what are you doing, a billionaire soliciting for prostitutes, sir?
He's a billionaire, I guess.
I mean... Yeah, world star hip hop. You got Instagram for that. You got represent.
he got Tom Terrific, his 6th Super Bowl, man. You know.
Oh man, he out there trying to function.
And he's going to a massage parlor in a strip mall.
Come on, man. Then you're not in Vegas.
No, you're in Jupiter, man. Florida.
You're in Florida, people. He's in Florida.
But at the end of the day, regardless of all that we just mentioned, does not question the integrity of the NFL.
Right.
No. Some people we have suspected. You know, we it was kind of, you know, in my opinion, I think it was kind of fishy that the Falcons, you know, that huge comeback that happened a couple years ago. I question that.
Well, that's the thing, Leon. I think a lot of people question a lot of things that happened.
But you came
in game during the games and stuff,
right?
You know,
to the fans.
You think that the OC just got a reward. Hey, lose this game because we want the Patriots to win. I mean,
right? But
he just went to a very strange play calling.
Exactly, and you know what? You don't know what was on his mind at that time, Shanahan. You know, maybe he was thinking like, okay, well, if we just keep doing this, then we're fine. And maybe him going out to San Francisco probably, you know, kind of did something to his mind.
Yeah, I've attempted to petition. You know, I was thinking about doing it, you know what I'm saying, as far as we need to get Pete Carroll's urine analysis during that Super Bowl.
Oh, and I was just about to bring that up. Where they were on 4th and goal from the 1, they did not go to Marshawn Lynch. When everyone thought they were going to go to Marshawn Lynch, when Tony Romo predicted they were going to go to Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, exactly.
And
that really falls on Russell Wilson. because Russell Wilson should have audible. He should have seen something. I mean, that's the whole point of being, because I believe what the speaker cuts off at 15 seconds or something like that before the play.
I think so.
So therefore, that Russell Wilson should have seen something in that defense that should have led him to call an audible.
And you know, maybe he did see something and said, you know what? I tell people all the time, man, the problem with that whole play was not the play call, it was the formation. Why would you not only give it to Marshawn Lynch? I get that. Don't get it to Marshawn Lynch. But if you go back and look at the replay, they put him out of motion and they put him as a receiver. Why would you do that?
You know, oh man, that's you know, yeah.
Why would you do that?
As you see, world, that right there, that was like 3 years ago, almost four.
Yeah,
and it's still it's like it happened yesterday.
Yeah, because you remember because it was like
4 years ago.
Yeah, it was 4 years ago.
Yeah, that right there is like, because you know to the casual observer, caught that
exactly.
So imagine if you're being paid seven figures.
Yes.
Not just to catch it, but to understand what's going on in the moment, and to miss that is just, you know. Yeah. So to stay on the NFL, so what do we think about this? Russell Wilson is talking about he wants to go play for the Giants?
Man, you know, it was a shocking story to me when I saw it. When I saw it come out, I thought it was a stunning thing for him to want to leave. No, not to want to leave Seattle, but to want to go to the Giants. Listen, they are sold on Eli Manning for one more season. And they're probably sold on a draft pick to get a quarterback, you know, in this year's upcoming draft. So why would you want to go there? Now, listen, with Saquon Barkley, can you imagine Russell Wilson and Saquon Barkley making noise?
Not throwing to Odell Beckham?
Yeah. And then you got Beckham on the outside. Hey, listen, that's a tandem you don't want to really mess with in certain cases. But Russell Wilson is not a backup, man. He's not a backup. And if he goes there, now maybe he'll outbeat Eli Manning.
I think he would.
You know, yeah, I think he would outbeat Eli Manning. But, man, to up and say the Giants, and you know, I don't know. The Giants are far away defensively too.
Yeah, that's the only. Yeah, I was about to mention that.
Yeah,
Giants
defensively, they're so far away.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like career cyanide. Like, what you trying to?
Everybody other than Landon Collins is really can really go. I mean, you keep Collins there because he's the best defender. He's been their best defender the last 3 years.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. That's like Matt Ryan, who pretty much been a consistent, you know, court. You know, I believe that, you know, Atlanta's been the model of consistency in the playoffs over the past about 8 years, almost 10 years now.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know. That's like Matt Ryan wanted to go play for the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
I just want to go and pay for the Buccaneers out of nowhere. Like, I want to pack it up.
I want to pack it up and leave.
Yeah, for
well,
what?
Russell Wilson will be flying clear across country, so maybe it's more like Matt wants to go play for the Raiders.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, who's Russell Wilson? He's married to, what, Ciara, isn't he?
Ciara.
Yeah.
Well, maybe she's got some record deals in New York.
Maybe so.
We've seen it happen with Carmelo Anthony and Lala, but we also seen what it did to Carmelo's career.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But you wouldn't have seen that Carmelo situation coming, right?
Yeah, because, you know, she wasn't having no Denver. That wasn't. That
nah,
was,
yeah. She wasn't going to. No, she's too big of a star at
Denver.
But everything looked like it was going okay for the Knicks at one point in time. And then
the bottom fell out.
Phil Jackson was hired. Phil Jackson, one of the greatest coaches of all time, if not the greatest coach of all time. But, man, as an executive.
Yeah, they had to get rid of him. You know, he brought his man in with Derek Fisher. And Derek Fisher wants to go off and mess with Matt Barnes' baby mother and call the big little Instagram social media war with him. You're a head coach.
Child's play.
Yeah, right. Going through social media problems with a current player and your former roommate over.
Right.
That's not a good look. He, you know, he had to let him go. Then, you know, just what they say. Some say that Phil Jackson may have been commissioned by the Lakers to go off and mess up the Knicks franchise.
Well, wasn't he? That's what Jeannie Buss wanted him to do.
Yes, exactly.
Sent him over there. You know, the Knicks have yet to recover.
They were damn near married at one point, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. So, well, you know, they
were engaged, and then I think they broke it off.
Yeah, and I guess Jim busts because of Phil's, you know, I guess Phil has to get a little touchy with Jeannie behind closed doors and, you know, say Jim wasn't feeling that and just didn't want to hire him as a head coach in 2013, which, as a Laker fan.
With his sister.
Yeah. I just didn't like the guy. Bring Mike D'Antoni in with Kobe, who's in his 20th year in the league and whatnot. You know what I mean? Run his ACL out the building. You know, but so is this realistic? Are we really going? So you're saying that it's not realistic, or it is realistic? We're going to see a Russell Wilson in New York because he made it public.
Well, they're going to have to probably pull some strings. I haven't heard anything about a deal being made or anything like that, so I'm not really sure. I have heard that he's shown interest in the Giants, but I don't know what his agent's going to do. What the Giants front office wants to do. I'm pretty sure they're pinning their ears back and saying, hey, you know what? Man, he might give us a shot here to get at least be relevant again, to at least get us back into the playoffs. The Giants hadn't been in the playoffs since they won the Super Bowl.
David Tyree?
That's ugly.
Yeah. Actually, after that, they beat Brady again with the Manningham catch.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah. So that was 2011.
They went 11-5 recently, didn't they?
They did, but I don't think they made the playoffs that year. You know, we've seen, there's been about 11 or 12 teams. I'm sorry, there's been about three or four teams, rather, that have not made the playoffs at 11-5. I know that New England Patriots team.
The year we actually beat them in 2009.
Didn't make the playoffs at 11-5. So, you know.
Let's be honest, the NFC East is kind of a mess right now.
Yeah.
I mean, if you put Russell Wilson on the Giants, that might push them over the top and could get them in there, depending on what Washington's quarterback situation happens. And, hey, if Russell Wilson moves to New York, what does that do to the Seahawks quarterback?
Oh, man.
Russell Wilson moving to New York or playing for the Giants is like Georgia Tech playing Georgia State, bro. It can do nothing but hurt you at this point in your career because now he's vying for, you know, I think he's put in a certain amount of work. He's been a model consistency in the playoffs. He has a Super Bowl victory and two Super Bowl appearances. If he has a couple more solid seasons, he's vying for a Hall of Fame spot.
But I see what you're saying with that. But if you look at the NFC West, he's not going to have a shot at the NFC West again.
Not in the foreseeable future.
Not in the foreseeable future. The Rams are there. That is their. That's right now their conference for the next year or two.
Although you know, there is some rumbling that this knee situation for Todd Gurley could, because you know, it's the same knee that he had problems with at Georgia. There's no question that that the Rams weren't telling everybody the whole truth about his situation in the Super Bowl.
He was actually more hurt than what most people thought he was. He wanted to get in that game,
and that's why they gave him that first rush. They did it, and then they just, and whenever he went back, and I think he went back in a half a dozen times, more as a decoy than anything else.
He was unfairly scrutinized for it. So.
Yeah.
He was more hurt than anything, man.
Yeah, he spent more time on the bike than he did on the game.
Exactly. And that's what a lot of people were getting at. Like, why is your best running back not in the game?
Because he's hurt. So he's got to try to come back from that. And if he can't come back 100%, that could spell the end of his career, and I've heard rumblings that might exactly be happening. This is a degenerative condition.
Oh man!
And if that is true, that will weaken the Rams a little bit, maybe give an opening for somebody. But the
49ers, I think that when Garoppolo comes back, they could be something to really, really mess with if they also get Antonio Brown.
That's
heard their name. I've heard the 49ers name come up in the Antonio Brown sweepstakes.
And Jerry Rice has been campaigning for that.
Yeah.
But again, getting back to my point, what do the Seahawks do as quarterback if Wilson leaves?
That's a great question.
Do they go in the draft? Do they call Colin Kaepernick?
Call Colin Kaepernick. There you go.
It can happen.
It can happen.
Yes.
It can happen. Call Colin Kaepernick. You're not going to lose anything. In fact, you might just win the division if you do that. Because the Seattle's defense is still pretty legit. They still got Bobby Wagner, one of the best linebackers in football. They got the Griffin boys who are playing extremely well. They still have a formidable secondary. They just have to figure out what they're going to do with Earl Thomas. That's the only thing. And a lot of people have been saying Dallas Cowboys.
Man, so, that Russell Wilson move to New York reeks of Sierra.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Reed. I'm not saying it. Right. I'm just saying
you're seeing strings fall behind.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to move to New York.
I got a record deal.
Seattle, it rains every day. I'm depressed.
Well, then don't come to Atlanta.
Yep. Don't come back home, Sierra.
Man. Yeah, man. I just, granted, you know, like I said Seattle has just been. When have you ever heard of a star quarterback?
Jim Zorn.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When have you heard of a star quarterback going to the media telling him I want to leave? I have a locked in spot. Russell Wilson for the most he must have just hit 30, so he has another contract in him.
Mm-hmm.
So you're willing to uproot everything that you've built or have been a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, because when we think, like, for example, Damian Lillard had just recently came out and said that he would not sell out to play on a super team. He's happy where he's at. You know, he's just all about being a consistent person. Right. I think we heard Giannis say the same thing, you know, and this is true for most stars, you know. Most stars don't leave. They're, you know, with the exception, I think LeBron may have been the first MVP, you know, since Moses Malone to leave his team after he won MVP. So, like, you know, isn't that what we all ask for in life, is just a little bit of stability?
Yeah.
Even LeBron James, who is LeBron James, signed a 4-year contract, because guess what? He just wanted some stability towards the end of his career.
True.
True.
And, I mean, I feel that with Russell Wilson, I mean, that he's going to be like that. I mean, John Elway, I mean, I'm pretty sure there was things going on in John Elway's career that, you know, but at the same time, you know, he stayed at Denver. You know, he's been a pretty consistent quarterback. Dan Marino's
spent his whole career in Miami.
So, like, that's what I'm saying. It's just based on historical patterns.
Right.
It just seems a bit odd. Not even just quarterbacks. I mean, shoot, they got even the wide receivers.
And there's not going to be that much of stability nowadays because of the money that is being tossed around in all three, or all four, rather, when you count the NHL, the top organizations. It's just so much money out there now. You know, more than what the guys from the 80s and 90s could ever dream.
Oh, of getting, man.
Yep. And that's why the stability. That's why you won't see the Kobe's. I mean, Kobe was probably the last of a dying breed. You know what I'm saying? To where you have one guy who can stay with one team. You know, you're not going to see that again. It's going to be tough to even think about it. Do you really think Greek Freak is going to stay in Milwaukee unless he wins a title? Unless, that's the only way I can see him staying there. Unless he wins a title. You see Anthony Davis. Hey, I'm one out of New Orleans.
Yeah, he don't care. They offer him $250 million. He's exactly. Like,
people are in his ear too.
Yeah.
The alumni of the league are in his ear saying, "Hey, man, you're not gonna get nothing done here in New Orleans. You need to go somewhere." And they're not just telling him you need to go somewhere. You need to go to a high market team where you can bring players with you.
Because
that's
team.
What this is all about. Yeah. We in the league of the super teams now.
Exactly.
Right?
And, well, we're winding it down here on our 22nd episode, Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. So this is when each of our panel has something to get off their chest. Daniel goes first.
Man, you know what? There was so many things that happened this week in sports. Zion Williamson, his shoe explodes. Don Newcomb passes away. Rest his soul. We've got the NCAA tournament that's right above the horizon. But there's something that I want to mention. And that's the NBA All-Star Weekend in comparison to the Super Bowl. Okay? Now, if there's anything that is better than the Super Bowl, it's there's one thing that the NBA All-Star Game is better than as far as the Super Bowl. And that's the halftime show.
Okay.
If you didn't watch the All-Star game last week, of course we know, listen, the Super Bowl will always and forever be better than the All-Star game. Why? Because the Super Bowl means something, of course, right?
Right.
You're going to win a championship versus this glorified game of street ball. Okay? So, that's going to be good. But what the NFL probably needs to learn here, and I have nothing against Maroon 5, okay? They're pretty decent. They did very well. Okay, they did okay. They did good. They brought Big Boy from Outkast out. They brought Travis Scott out. Fine. But what should have been headlined, and I think John mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, is probably some of the icons of hip-hop. When you think of the city of Atlanta, it's all hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
Ludacris, T.I., hell, the Ying Yang Twins. I mean, those guys. The Migos even should have had a spot. And they're the hottest thing right now. Outkast, Goody Mob. I'm talking about the who's who. If you want to bring back T-Boz and Left Eye, not Left Eye, rest her soul, T-Boz and Chili from TLC, Escape, bring those guys. You know, bring those ladies. You know, get that Skate. J. Cole tore the house down at NBA All-Star Weekend. He absolutely did a phenomenal job. And guess where he's from?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. North Carolina. See, that's what I'm talking about with as far as halftime entertainment. Listen, the game will never be, the Super Bowl will always be and forever be like heads on. It should be a national holiday.
Right.
But you got to get your halftime show straightened out. The halftime show has really been kind of inconsistent probably since the Justin Timberlake incident. Why? Because the NFL has been tiptoeing around that whole thing. Like, oh, man, we don't want to have nothing else go on, so we're not going to bring X and Y, X, Y, Z.
And we don't want to offend anybody.
And we don't want to offend anybody. Oh, please. Give me a break. Where's the Super Bowl going to be at next year?
Miami.
Miami. Rose. Pitbull. Rick Ross should highlight that.
Pitbull.
Yes. I'm petitioning for Rose to be in the halftime show next year for the Super Bowl.
They'll probably get Gloria Estefan and the Miami Sound Machine.
Yeah,
probably
what
they're,
so.
It's probably what they're going to do. Leon.
Yeah. I wanted to touch on as far as what we were discussing a little earlier as far as being, you know, consistency and stability. You know, I think that, you know, especially with the offering of the, you know, the Supermax contracts in NBA, you know, seeing your $220 million, I mean, just insane numbers, you know. And yet and still, despite those insane numbers being brought out, it's not curbing free agent moves.
True.
Right.
You know, you have, we question if the Greek Freak will actually stay. We're also questioning if Carl Anthony Towns will actually stay in Minnesota, despite how putrid they are, unfortunately. I mean, I believe they're going to miss the playoffs this year. Again.
Who did you say?
Carl Anthony Towns.
Oh, yes. T-Wolves. Yeah. Sad. That's really sad, too.
Yeah, they're, you know, I predict the move from Minnesota within the next 3 years for him, maybe 4 years, because, you know, 3 years is too soon in his contract. You know, so, you know, I guess money can't buy everything. You know, at the end of the day, and we're also seeing that with Mr. Kyrie Irving. You know, his future is in doubt, depending on how well they do in the playoffs in Boston. You know, will he make it out to L.A.?
Right.
So, you know, I guess at the end of the day, the title of this will be, I guess, money does not buy stability. Nope. At the end of the day.
No, it does not.
Yeah.
Well, people have had weird weeks, but nothing compares to the week that the University of Georgia basketball squads went through these past 7 days.
Yes.
We talked with Matt Stewart a little bit on the women's side. Joni Taylor gave birth Monday, 24 hours after a loss to Alabama. She is on the bench when her team defeats Arkansas a few nights later. But that pales in comparison, and congratulations to Coach Taylor on that birth. You're doing it. It's amazing what you've been able to do on that, truly doing it all. But that pales in comparison to what the men's team has endured the past 7 days. First up, against Mississippi State, they're up by one. Someone throws a beanbag bulldog onto the floor. Technical foul gets called. Mississippi State makes the two foul shots. They win the ball game in this instance. And, of course, Georgia only with the one SEC victory. And when Georgia wants some normalcy, they go to Ole Miss. But weirdness follows them, too. 8 Ole Miss players kneel down during the national anthem protesting a Confederate rally taking place near campus. A rally that has absolutely nothing to do with the school, by the way. Just outside people coming in thinking that has something to do. So now the whole kneeling during the national anthem comes back into the spotlight. And will we once again have this debate about are the Ole Miss players being anti-American for kneeling during the national anthem? They said point blank when asked, we're doing it because of the Confederate rally. The question is, and we won't know this for a while, will and by America, I mean the right-wing leaning Twitter mob mentality, listen to them, or will they keep trying to promote their own agenda? I'd like to think that it won't happen, but honestly, I think it's going to.
Yeah, me too.
All right, that's going to wrap us up here for the last three guys to do a podcast. Thank you so much for joining us here. Appreciate all of your listenership as we wind up our 22nd episode as we kind of count down the end of college basketball. Spring training coming up again as well. We'll be sure to talk a lot about MLB spring training and everything else that's going around. Thanks to Matt Stewart for joining us here. Always appreciative to talk to him. For
Leon Brown
and I'm John Morgo. Tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell someone you don't know, tell someone you've known forever. We are the last three guys to do a podcast. We're coming at you next week with more exciting commentary on the Atlanta world of sports. But until then, have a good night, everybody.